Hi, I am Nagam Pati. I am a stranger to this department. I am a computer science department professor, and there are some strangers working in this room from CS department, and one more is coming in. So I am very pleased to introduce Minkes Vandenbriel, who is going to be doing his PhD dissertation defense today. So I normally give a little couple of minute introduction to my students, and I ask John whether it's okay for Hillary engineering, and he said fine, so I'm going to do this. So Hillary Clinton, who I don't know where she is anymore now, has said it takes a village to raise a child. Apparently it takes much more than that to raise a PhD student such as Minkes. Apparently most of the Western United States, at least the following people have played a very important role in his PhD education. Rene Weyerhaupers, John Fowler, Thomas Watson, and myself. And then there are, you know, of course, his committee members, Amit Keha and Goran Kanjewar, too. So I was, when Minkes showed up to talk to me and wonder if they want to work on automated planning stuff, and I remember we used to be in this building in computer science, and which means that he's been around in PhD for too long. So I remember having a lunch with Rene, who was in Cafe Istanbul, and you know, during some conversation, saying that, you know, this guy, Minkes, wants to work with me, what do you think? And he said, oh, he's a nice, strange guy. And he said it in a sort of affectionate way, and I'm hoping that he said it in a good way. I don't quite know what he meant by Minkes being strange. Maybe that he's from Mars. that you were surprised that somebody who made national press, this, by the way, is the Wall Street Journal picture, mugshot of Minkes, on the front page, you know, who made it to Wall Street Journal front page on a certain type of work, which is basically boarding strategies. And even now, if you ever take America West and you see fellow passengers griping and moaning, saying, why are there seven zones and there are only four people standing to get into the plane? They're griping about him. You know, he couldn't quite understand why he would want to change into something else, maybe, or maybe he couldn't quite understand why. His directions are so broad, you know, crossed over into multiple areas, including automated planning. This was in, I think, planning summer school in 2003, mm-hmm. And I believe this is supposed to be ASU with him being F. we were very happy to have Minkes as our adopted kid, and I was very happy that industrial engineering was enlightened to let this kind of a class work go on. I also want to say a little thing about the kind of work that he's going to talk about, which he will go into much more detail in a minute. So George Bernard Shaw said America and the United Kingdom are two great nations separated only by a common language. And because we can't understand British English and they can't understand US English, and then I speak Indian English. I always felt that industrial engineering and operations research on one side and automated planning and artificial intelligence on the other side are similar in the sense they have very common problems, but they don't talk to each other much. Okay. This guy, I'm sure this is a majority industrial engineering OR crowd. I'm pretty sure I don't need to tell you who this guy is. In 91, you know, he did a quote. He said that really what he was wanting to try to do was planning in dynamic domains, and that's the reason he got into his nice simplex algorithm and all that fun stuff. In a way, there is a lot of connection, as Minkes explained, between automated planning that his dissertation was wound up being on, and operations research. That's where his major background came from, both in master's as well as PhD. And then, in a way, he tried to build this little bridge. One of them is John Fowler, one of them is Gautam Bhatti. I'll let you decide who is who. I'm so happy that there is no big hole there, that you can actually come and shake hands. Seriously, what I'm really hoping to do is that, you know, this kind of what that process boundary is all the rage now. And for students, it is a little tricky to be involved. And I think, you know, as John would say, as I would say, as Thomas would say, Minkus had a lot of, you know, balancing to do across multiple departments. But our hope is that, in fact, his work is going to have just as much more impact because it can, you know, provide bridges between multiple disciplines. Now, of course, you could, of course, build a bridge which nobody uses because it's way far away somewhere in the middle of nowhere. So I want to end with one slide explaining that, in fact, he is building bridges that people are using. This is Google Scholar thinking about the paper that Minkus has been writing on automated planning. And you notice that he hasn't yet completed his PhD, but he's already getting cited quite well. And then one other thing I should mention is last year we got this call from an airport manager, Donald Hearn, who is actually a discrete mathematics program manager, and his entire career is in operations research, and he runs this discrete mathematics program, and he was interested in asking us to submit a proposal. We wrote one, it did came close, he asked us to resubmit it, we're going to do it this time, hopefully, with this senior personnel becoming a research faculty member at Colorado School of Business, if, in fact, the rest of his presentation today works well. If not, we'll see him here for some more time. So with that, short introduction, I leave the stage to Minkus.
Thank you very much. Okay. So what I'll try to do is sort of summarize my research on integer programming approaches for automated planning. But before I start, I'd like to give some sort of background. I just want to sort of talk about a problem that I guess most of you are already familiar with, and that's the problem of scheduling. Scheduling is an ordering problem. Given a number of tasks or given a number of actions, scheduling is the problem of deciding when to execute each of the actions. Planning can be seen as sort of a generalization on scheduling. Planning is not only an ordering problem, planning is also a selection problem. And specifically, planning is deciding both what actions you need to do and when you need to execute them. And if you sort of look at the computational complexity, you'll notice that most of the interesting problem in scheduling, certain job shops, certain flow shop environments, certain single machine and parallel machine environments, fall in the class of NP-complete. Planning, on the other hand, is T-space complete. And just to give you a little bit intuition about this, consider this Towers of Hanoi puzzle. The aim is here to move all these disks from one pin to another pin, but you're only allowed to move one disk at a time, and you're not allowed to put a larger disk on a smaller disk. While you can represent this problem on a computer using only polynomial amount of space, the problem is that the solution can be exponentially long. And the same issue arises in planning problems. Planning problems can be represented in only polynomial amount of space. However, a solution plan may include exponential many actions. Just to give you a little bit more feel about what a planning problem really is, automated planning is all about creating a computer program that can produce a plan for you, such that, and where a plan is a sequence of actions that will transform the world from a given initial state to a desired goal state. And here I have a very simple example where the world consists of a package, a truck, and two locations. And in the initial state, both the package and the truck are in location one, and your goal is to ship the package to location two. And in order to transform from one state to another state, you can execute actions. And actions are sort of interpreted as state transformation functions. The challenge, though, in planning is not so much about solving the logistics problem. Planning, in general, is domain independent. It doesn't really matter what your world is, as long as your world can be described by a set of states, and that there is a single initial state, that there is one or more goal states, and that you have actions that will allow you to go from one state into another state. And just to give you a sense of the generality, all of the planning problems that are in the class P space can be cast as a planning problem. And this sort of automatically infers that all the problems that are in NP can be cast as a planning problem. So whether you're solving Towers of Hanoi, traveling salesman problem, a job shop scheduling problem, all of those problems can be cast into a scheduling problem, into a planning problem. And because it is generality, you can expect there to be many applications for planning technology and even many potential applications for planning technology. The Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute is using planning technology on their underwater robotics. NASA is currently not using their planning technology on the rovers, but they did experiment planning technology on the Deep Space One spacecraft, where they allowed the onboard computer to have full control over the spacecraft thrusters. Planning is also being used in a bridge program. It can also be used in other games. Planning can be used in manufacturing. Given this initial shape, which milling and drilling operations do you have to do, and in what order do you have to do them to create this sort of final shape, obviously respecting certain constraints. There's also other various potential applications in web services and cybersecurity. But let's go back to sort of contrast scheduling and planning. Scheduling is an area that has been studied mainly by the operation research community. And these problems typically involve solving hard optimization problems. Planning, on the other hand, has been mainly studied by the artificial intelligence community. And these problems typically involve solving hard feasibility problems. And when you look at the solution approaches, integer programming has been a very popular approach to solve scheduling problems. And just because planning is sort of a generalization of scheduling, one would expect there to be also a lot of integer programming approaches for planning. Well, surprisingly, the opposite is true. Planning is an area that is dominated by constraint satisfaction, satisfiability, A*STAR, and other heuristic search methods. And really, there's only been very little focus on using integer programming approaches for automated planning. And while this list may seem quite impressive, I maybe should have added a footnote that before I started my research, this is actually an exhaustive list of all the work that was out there before I started. So on average, about 1 year a paper appeared since 1997 on using IP for planning. And I mean, that's sort of quite a short supply of papers if you just compare that to the number of IP-based papers on scheduling that just come out of this department. So why has there been such a lack of interest of using integer programming approaches in automated planning? Well, there are sort of three main reasons that have been cited. And one of the reasons was that, well, IP-based approaches simply don't work. And actually, the first paper that described a linear programming-based heuristic for optimal planning described this approach, but then in the conclusions came up like, well, this approach actually failed because it just didn't scale up. Another reason that is cited is that other approaches, and in particular, satisfiability approaches, are much, much faster. And set-based approaches have had a long history in planning, and they have participated in several editions of the international planning competition. And I'll talk a little bit more about these competitions in a later slide. And another thing is, traditionally, in the field of planning, there has been very little focus on plan quality. And this is mainly due to the complexity. Planning is phase-based complete, so why do you want to go and find an optimal plan while finding a feasible plan is already hard enough? So my research and contributions sort of try to counter these reasons. And in my research, I actually show that IP-based approaches do work in automated planning problems. I created a planner called OptiPlan, and I was the first planner to enter this international planning competition. And it actually didn't do too bad. It was ranked second in 4 out of 7 of the competition domains. In the other part of my research, it actually showed that IP-based approaches can compete with satisfiability-based approaches. And there are sort of two key ideas that help improve these formulations, and that is by representing planning as a set of interdependent network flow problems. And also by another idea, I'll go into more detail a little later, by generalizing the notion of action parallelism. And also my research has sort of contributed to a sort of a general shift in the area towards optimal planning. And in this respect, I applied some of these formulations to a problem that is known as partial satisfaction planning. And these planning problems are very, quality sensitive. Moreover, I've been working on a framework for optimal planning. And this is obviously a very tricky issue, and actually I'm excited about this, because we're trying to find optimal solutions in a problem that is P-space complete. But apart from using IP-based approaches solely to solve planning problems, we can actually use their LP relaxations and use those in deriving quality-sensitive heuristic. And it's actually quite a new direction of research and has been actually very successful. And sort of these contributions has resulted in sort of these main publications. I guess for the remainder of the talk, I want to talk about all of these different points individually in a little bit more detail. So let me start with the first one, but just because of the interest of time, I'll be very brief on this one. I just wanted to say I was working on a planner called OptiPlan, and it's an integer programming-based planner that extended the state change formulation that was originally developed by Vossen and his colleagues. And we entered this planner in the international planning competition. And this is a competition that is held every 2 years, and it provides data sets. It provides planning domains that are used as benchmarks by the community. And in the fourth edition of this competition, there were 7 competition domains, and there were 7 planners that participated in the optimal track. And just to give you a sense about these domains, some of these domains are based on real-world applications, like PipesWorld. There you want to control the flow of different oil blends through a network of pipes, but you have to obey certain constraints regarding capacity and compatibility. There is a domain that involves satellites, and you need to make pictures of certain phenomena in space, and you have to move your satellites around. And there's also sort of like these puzzle domains that is all about finding or really avoiding deadlocks in communication protocols. And again, I just wanted to briefly go over these. So these are results from these different domains. And on the x-axis, there are problem instances, and they normally increase in difficulty. And on the y-axis, there is solution time in a log scale. And as you can see, there were 7 participating planners. Not all the planners could actually solve the tiniest problem instance. But as you can see, OptiPlan in this color actually did reasonably well, especially in these top 2 domains. It's a clear second place. But as you can see, there was this other planner, a satisfiability-based planner, that sort of outperformed this IP-based planner by roughly an order of magnitude. So now I want to actually spend a bit more detail on how can we improve these integer programming-based approaches to actually compete with set-based approaches. And one of the key ideas is is to represent planning as a set of interdependent network flow problems. And let me just go back to this example where we had a truck and a package and we want to ship the package from one location to the other location. We can represent this problem in terms of what we call state variables. Obviously, you can sort of look at this domain and figure out that the truck can obviously only be at one location at the time. It is either in location one or in location two. Likewise, the package can only be in one place at the time. It is either at location one, location two, or it is inside the truck. Actions are still seen as state transformation functions. For example, the load action will change the state of the package from being at location one to being inside the truck. Moreover, the load action also has a condition on the truck. If you want to load the package, it better be that the truck stays at that location. And we call these state changes effects, and we call these conditions prevail conditions. So now that we can represent planning problems in terms of networks, how do we go about formulating this into an integer programming formulation? Well, we can sort of stretch these networks out over time and consider plans of increasing length. Really what we're doing, we're breaking the planning problem up in plan steps, where in every plan step, we allow one state change. We'll either allow the state variable to change through an effect, or we allow the change variable to change over a prevail condition. And once you sort of set up this layered network, you try to find a plan on this network. Is there a path that leads from the initial state to the goal state of the different state variables? And here you can see that there is no specific goal for the truck. It can be at either at one or two locations. And obviously, if you cannot find a plan for your given number of plan steps, you just increase the number of plan steps. And you do this until you find a plan length at which you can find a plan. And this is actually the solution for that little logistics problem. And just to give you an idea here is that these networks are interdependent. They are connected through each other. Actions have both effects over multiple of these state variables. So these network flow problems are not independent. There are certain size constraints that sort of link them together, which makes it hard. And this is sort of, this is the formulation itself, and I'll just quickly go over it. There are variables for each of the arcs in this layered network, and there are variables for the actions. And these are just the network flow constraints. There's a constraint for every node. And these are constraints that link the actions with the arcs. And these are also the constraints that sort of link the different networks together. When you just use that idea, represent planning as a set of interdependent network flow problems, we can actually get huge performance gains. And just to show you, and I'll be going over again a few results, and I'm now using domains from the second and third edition of the planning competition, and I'm comparing this one state change formulation with set plan 4, which was the winner of the fourth edition of the planning competition, and both planners are given the same amount of resources. And they are tested on many more domains, but I'm just taking only a small selection. And these domains are logistics and drive lock. Logistics is exactly the same as I showed you, but it involves more trucks, more packages, more locations. Driver lock is a little bit more involved. It also involves that you have to deal with the driver. There is another domain that's called blocks roll. It's all about stacking and unstacking blocks. and Xena travel, instead of transporting packages, you're transporting people between airports. And here are the results of using this the one state change formulation versus SEP plan 04. And just by doing that simple representation, we can actually already get quite significant performance gains. And in certain domains, we're already outperforming SEP plan. In other domains, SEP plan is still very competitive. And again, the same thing, problem instances and solution time. But there was another thing. There was a number two, and you can actually improve these formulations even more by generalizing the notion of action parallelism. I'll talk a little more about that in the next slide. But the result of this is that right now, your formulation grows as the number of plan steps increase. And if you have a plan that requires 1,000 actions, you may require to initiate 1,000 plan steps. So ideally, you like to sort of use fewer plan steps, but still solve the same planning problem. And we can sort of do a clever trick, and that is represent these state variables in a slightly different network. Instead of allowing one state change per plan step, we also allow the value to prevail before and after a state change has occurred. And if you use this interpretation or this translation of that state variable, you can actually solve that small logistics problem that I showed not in three planning steps, but in just two planning steps. And this may not be a very big improvement, but in other domains, some of these reductions can be quite a bit more significant. There's one issue, though. We're now allowing more actions to be executed in the same plan step. But then we're also, we sort of have to figure out how do we schedule these actions within that plan step. And you can obviously simply find certain ordering constraints between these actions. If you look at a single state variable and a solution looks like this, where there are two actions that prevail this value. There's an action that changes that value, and there's an action that prevails that value. You can easily infer that both action 1 and 2 have to occur before action 3, and action 3 has to occur before action 4. However, there are many more state variables, and in other state variables, you might see something like this, where action 4 has to be executed before action 1. And in this case, you have an ordering conflict. And in order to deal with these ordering conflicts, you have to generate constraints that will remove these cycles. And these constraints are sort of very similar to sub-tour elimination constraints as you see in a TSP. But they're slightly different. And so this formulation that allows what we call a generalized one state change looks as follows. It is identical to the one state change formulation, but there is a few constraints that are slightly different just to represent or to allow these prevail conditions to happen before and after change. But there's also this whole new set of constraints of cycle elimination constraints. The problem is, as in TSP, there can be exponentially many sub-tour elimination constraints, and so also in this problem, there can be exponentially many ordering or cycle elimination constraints. So in order to deal with that cleverly, we use a branch and cut algorithm, we generate these ordering constraints on the fly. Yeah, just to give you a brief idea, I think most of you will be familiar with this. But you're given the original formulation without any of these constraints. You solve it if your current solution is potentially better. You check the solution and see if there are any ordering conflicts. If there are any ordering conflicts, you generate that cycle elimination constraint, add it to the formulation, and resolve it. And that obviously goes on and on until you found a feasible solution. There's other ways to play with this. You can even allow different representations, or you can translate these state variables in different ways. And this is just another example of how you can do this. And this actually allows you to solve that tiny logistics problem in just a single planning step. Obviously, the ordering or the scheduling part becomes more involved. And I'll show you some of the results for these different formulations. There is still SAP Plan 2004. There is a one state change formulation, the generalized one state change formulation, and the what we call the path state change formulation or state change path formulation. What these graphs show you is again, these same domains and same problem instances, but it shows you how many plan steps were needed to solve these different problem instances. And as you can see, by using these generalized interpretations or these generalized translations of state variables to networks, you can actually reduce the number of plan steps needed to solve a planning problem. And in certain domains, these reductions can be very significant, and in other domains, maybe not so much, but still, you only require fewer planning steps. To look at the performance, you can notice that there is going to be a trade-off. I showed you two different translations of these layered networks. And it seems that sometimes the overhead of dealing with the cycle elimination actually becomes too much. And here you can see that this generalized one-state change, even though it generally used more planning steps than the state change path formulation, it was still able to solve the problems faster in most of the problems. So there is sort of this trade-off between reducing the plan length versus dealing with these ordering constraints. Sort of to go into the last part is there has been in recent years a sort of a general shift towards optimal planning. And in this sense, I've applied some of these formulations to partial satisfaction planning problems, developed a novel framework for optimal planning, and utilized the LP relaxations of these formulations in deriving heuristics. Partial satisfaction is more of an optimization problem. Planning just involves finding a plan, or finding a plan of a certain length. Find me the plan of the minimum length, for example. In partial satisfaction, you introduce costs on actions, utilities on goals, and obviously when you have to deal with costs and utilities, it certainly becomes more of an optimization problem. And there's Bylander showed that doing optimal planning, just finding the shortest plan, is piece-based complete. But when you add cost and utilities, it doesn't really change the complexity. And this was shown in some of my earlier work. Also, I worked on a framework for optimal planning, and this maybe requires a little bit more of a detail. All these formulations that I described so far have a bit of a restriction. They can only be optimal for the given number of planned steps. There is no way of telling if these actions had costs. There is no way of telling that there is an even cheaper plan that requires maybe 5 planning steps. So in order to deal with this tricky issue, we try to plan on just these state variables alone and forget about translating them into layered networks. So the formulation for that is that's very simple. I mean, you have constraints, variables for each arc, constraints for each node, and there's also variables for each action. And then it's a very simple, several network flow constraints. The problem is, though, is that if you do just that, you're failing to recognize several aspects of the planning problem. And in order to improve, one thing I forgot to say here, when you try to sort of solve everything over these state variables without breaking the planning problem down in plan steps, you're really solving the planning problem in a single planning step, any planning problem. And this obviously introduces a huge scheduling problem. How in the world are you going to find out how to order the actions? And in order to do that, and without using these cycle elimination constraints, we borrow an idea from automata theory. And automata are nothing more than labeled directed graphs, very much similar to those state variables that I've shown you. And the idea that we use is that in automata theory, they have something what they call a parallel composition. It's really, you're given two of these automata or two of these state variables, and you sort of try to merge them into a single but larger state variable. To give you a little bit of feel of that, this was our example. If you try to merge these state variables together, you can get this new larger network. And if you introduce new variables for these arcs, and if you introduce new constraints on these nodes, you can actually create very strong constraints or additional constraints that you can add to your existing formulation. And these constraints can actually help you very much. Here I have just a short list of results. Problems, some of these problems I've already discussed, logistics problems, free cells, just a popular card game on Windows, driver lock is at a similar logistics problem, Xeno travel we've seen, TPP is again somewhat of a more involved a logistics problem, and there's the block stacking problem. So there's a couple of columns that I'm showing here. There is one column, I'll start with this one, LP, that is basically using the very basic formulation without doing all these parallel compositions on these state variables. If you just use a formulation on your state variables that are given by the planning problem, your LP relaxation is pretty weak. If you add these composition constraints, you'll notice that the LP relaxation improves drastically. In this column, I'm showing you the optimal solution, how many actions are needed to go from the initial state to the goal. And this is the minimum amount of actions that are needed to go from the initial state to the goal. For certain problems, the optimal solution is simply not known. But other than that, you can see, and the values are highlighted, if the LP relaxation is equivalent to the optimal solution. And obviously, when a value is not highlighted, it doesn't mean that it's not optimal. I mean, in some cases, we just don't know what the optimal solution really is. So in that case, I mean, I didn't highlight it, but it could still potentially be equal to the optimal solution. So you can see that some of these domains, these LP relaxations, provide very strong bounds. I had one column here, I didn't go over it. And that's just another way of calculating a lower bound on the minimum number of actions required. And this is a heuristic approach that came forth out of the planning community. And when you want to solve these problems, and if we look at the time, we can see that even for the larger problems, or at least most of the larger problems, most of them can be solved within several seconds. And this is very useful, because now we can actually use these LP relaxations to derive, or to use in other heuristics. We can blend these LP relaxations with other techniques that have come forward in AI planning, and to combine them into sort of hybrid techniques. And this is just one example by a colleague of mine, where he's using these LP relaxations in a heuristic search method. The interesting note is, though, is that when you're adding some of known techniques out of planning technology, then these techniques actually gain a lot of improvement. And to sort of summarize it all up, my work has shown that actually, IP approaches do work in planning. We built this planner, OptiPlan, competed in the planning competition, and we did quite well. Then we improved upon these formulations and showed that we were able to compete with satisfiability approaches. And not only that, the whole work that I've been working on has been part of sort of this general shift in the community towards optimal planning. And some of the interesting ideas is that we're working on a framework to do optimal planning. We've seen these LP solutions that get very close to the optimal solution, but we're also using those in sort of hybrid techniques. And to sort of give you an idea of the publication status, these are sort of the main publications in journals and conferences, and there are some minor publications in workshop and in poster format, and the citation count is given by Google Scholar. So with that, I'll leave it up to you if you have any questions. I sort of had to find a balance between how deep I want to go, how much background I want to give. I mean, I don't know, maybe there's really nothing.
You're off the hook, you already spend it up. Everyone else in the room I'm making notes on.
Sure. These empty circles are upper bounds. The optimal solution is not greater than that circle. HLP is using these linear programming relaxation in a branch-inbound search technique. But it's just using that to drive the search in the branch-inbound tree. Here you can see that, yeah, the performance is, I mean, okay. If you add other techniques to this, then, yeah, you can see that, yeah, improvements certainly, yeah, I mean, improve in various domains. The exact details about what exactly these things are, I mean, I guess the best thing is you may want to ask Jay, who left actually the room. but yeah, I mean, they are, I mean, using, yeah, relaxed plan extraction, yeah. Again, I don't want to go because I don't know the exact details myself too much. But so basically, these are just with the basic LP. Yeah, so the basic LP. If you add them with other approaches, you can gain a lot. Just alone, yeah, they are reasonably weak.
But there's a very minor technical reason because of the state confusion from the encoding. But they are supposedly, they're supposedly writing a version for the journal publication where they're actually trying with the more standard encoding. But should be mentioned that the direct plan version of the heuristic is no longer admissible. So it's not actually admissible long, but you know, so in these things, if they're actually just looking at, empirically looking at quality improvement rather than giving upfront guarantees. So if you use just the unit state without any change, then you know, it will be up.
It happens automatically. Let me go back. And then I go home. A planning problem is represented, by actions and to a computer. When a computer reads this planning instance, it could be just any weird language. I mean, a computer doesn't know what a load action means. I mean, it's just a action. The computer does look at what are the conditions for this action to execute and what are the effects that this action has as, what sort of transformations will it have on the state. So, when you read in a planning instance, it really doesn't matter. I mean, once you read this, you only analyze or you look at the actions, and from that you automatically create the variables and the constraints. And obviously, after that, you solve it. So, when the planning problem is this, I'm not manually creating constraints for packages, for trucks, and for other things. This all happens sort of blindfoldedly by the computer. Oops. And it'll just create this formulation, not knowing what the domain really is.
So what exactly do you have to do with
the planning format is called PDDL, Planning Domain Description Language. Let me just quickly bring something up to show that. Sorry for doing this. Yeah. So this is what the computer reads. It reads in an action load. It has certain parameters. It goes over an object and another object and another object, and these objects stand for packages, trucks, and locations. Although, the computer only knows that these are objects and that they are typed to either being packages or trucks or locations. Then it reads in the conditions that are required to execute the action. If you want to load object P into T at L, it better be that P is at L. And it better be that T is at L as well. And at the end of the action, you have P in T, and you don't have P at L anymore. And these objects you need to sort of ground out. If there are 10 packages and 10 trucks and 10 locations, you can generate many load actions. For every package into every truck at every location, you have a load action. Likewise, the unload and the drive action. So the computer will read in a file that has this, but it also reads in a separate file that says how many packages there are, how many trucks there are, and how many locations there are. Yes. So your first question was, obviously, if you know the domain, if you know you're solving logistics, why not create a formulation for that? I guess this is the whole reason why this falls under artificial intelligence. And this is part of planning. Planning is sort of traditionally being domain independent, because sometimes you just don't know how your environment is, and you still want to reason about actions. And sure, the interesting thing is, if we can create formulations out of this, can we derive cuts that are general across the scope? And yes, that's exactly what we're doing, especially in this sort of this later work where we're trying to create a framework for optimal planning. We're creating formulations for these problems, and then come up with strong constraints or new cuts that will improve the quality of the LP relaxation, but these cuts are general in the sense that they apply to whatever planning problem or whatever planning domain you're solving. So these cuts are sort of across the board. And I think that's, for me, that's the interesting part. I mean, you're creating cuts that are really domain independent. I have 525. Yeah, I mean, either one, it's fine. I think that this may be a bit noisy or...